In the UK, Ling Pang interviews people from all around the world, and she is Bondi Tunes International.
Bondi Tunes, playing all over the planet now.
Hi, this is Ling Pang for Bondi Tunes International, and I talked with Michelle Monroe, who is the author of the book The Autonomous Cruiser. I think it's the first book ever been published by an author called The Autonomous Cruiser.
Yeah, there isn't anything on the market, you know, which I thought was awful, you know.
It's something that is needed, really, because everybody has the right to go on a holiday. But sometimes it's the stress that put people off. It's how do I get access on a wheelchair? How do I get information if I can't get to here and there? It has taken you 3 years to write this book, Michelle.
Yes, I know. I didn't think it would take so long, but, you know, I need to research and investigate everything very thoroughly. You know, I'm very pig-headed, and I like to make sure that I, you know, hopefully left no stone unturned. And then, of course, it was delayed because of the COVID, because, you know, there's no point bringing a book out like this when the ships aren't cruising.
You know, I had
to do an update because of Brexit, and then I did another update because of COVID. So I thought, it's now or never.
Well, because, Michelle, you are also a specialist speaker for companies including Celebrity, P&O, Fred Olsen, and the Royal Caribbean. These are all very popular cruise ships. Therefore, you are really connected with people. People know who you are because you've been doing this for such a long time. Do you feel that because you are the author of the book, and surely during your cruises, you should be able to sell a lot more books through there as well, wouldn't you?
Well, to be honest, the ships are very particular about the subjects you talk about, and they don't want anything that kind of brings people down, if you know what I mean, illnesses and, you know, even if it's a good feel book. So I don't think I'll be talking about it on the ships, you know, apart from socially.
Oh, I understand what you mean. Is this the reason why you are promoting the book through a publisher and also through media and the radio stations?
Yes, because the thing is, you see, and you've got to be very careful, you know, if you favour one ship brand, then others get upset. And so this way, if you stay sort of neutral in your own terms, you know.
You know, your book, The Autonomous Cruiser, is that the first of a kind?
Yeah, it is literally a market first. And I couldn't believe it, Ling, because, you know, I've got multiple cirrhosis myself. Now, I've cruised for more than 40 years, and I've only worked on the ships for 14. Mm. But over the years, I've seen, you know, as my disability got worse, that there were things that had stumbling blocks. And then I got talking to other people, and I realized that it is a minefield if you don't know what you're doing before you book. I mean, it's, you know, literally information is everything. And so we explore the ships, the right ships for you, the right destinations, because it's important. I've had one of the most common things is that if you're a wheelchair user permanently, what people don't know is if the ship has to tender. Now, a tender means that the ship anchors off the port and they use the lifeboats to tender people ashore. Mm-hmm. But what they don't realise is that wheelchair users are not allowed in the tenders. It's a safety thing, unless you can physically walk onto the tenders. Now, a lot of people will book a holiday based on, obviously, ports they want to see, not realising. Like, for instance, Norway, quite a lot of the ports are tender because they're very shallow waters and the ship can't dock, you know, right at the pier. And they don't realize until they physically get there that they can't get off. You know, knowledge is everything. It gives you the power to make the decisions that, you know, will give you the best holiday of your life.
It's a complete guide to cruising for and with disabled travelers. Taking you 3 years to research for this book. So how did you gather all the information? Did you speak to all the cruise ship companies
and the passengers themselves? That was my main source, because, you know, I meet obviously a lot of people on the ships. Before the pandemic, I spent sort of 7 to 9 months at sea, and so, you know, the amount of people at my fingertips was so valuable. And I'd ask them, you know, what were your main frustrations when you booked, before you ever got on the ship, and what's been your major disappointments once you got on? and then you gather that information. And, you know, don't get me wrong, this isn't just about people who have a mobility problem. This is for people with diabetes, epilepsy, you know, heart problems. It's a whole spectrum of disability that we cover, from kidney disease to people who've got hearing and sight problems.
Your book is very thorough. You put them in points, cruise and port choices, and you wrote about critical pre-planning information, including holiday administration, vaccination, medication, cabin selection, and also life on board incorporates embarkation, cruise ships, and dining entertainment. You covered everything.
You know, as I say, when we were talking about tenders, there's even a section in the book which tells you every single tender port in the world. You can literally go to that and go, oh, no, don't want to go there or there or there, if you can't get off, you know. I just think it's important that we have a reference. There was, the trouble is that the internet is full of dead sites or misinformation. Nobody's policing it. So when the information is out of date, nobody's going on and taking that site down. Mm-hmm. And there was one poor lady, she wanted to plan a trip of a lifetime for her husband, who's paraplegic.
Yeah.
And she wanted to take him to Venice. And she looked up everything, including researching when the bridge lifts were open, et cetera, et cetera. Not realizing that when she got there, the lifts hadn't been working in more than 2 years. Now, Venice, you can't get around, you know, like in a taxi. It's just full of bridges and waterworks. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was a devastating trip for her.
How can your book help people and find information before they leave for a holiday?
Well, the thing is, the main part of the information is in the book. There's a lot of things that will never change, you know. And, for instance, you know, people go, oh, we're blind, I need to take my guide dog. Well, literally, it could be a whole book on that in itself, all the rules and regulations you have to go through to take the dog on board and where the dog is allowed and not allowed, et cetera, et cetera. So, as I say, if somebody wants to book a trip, you know, it could be the mother of someone who's disabled or a carer, you know, who've never cruised before. But actually, even if they have cruised before, they will never ever, but if they haven't cruised with someone who has a disability, it's a whole different holiday for them. You know, they just because they've cruised before, there are things that come up that they won't have even thought of. You know, for instance, if you have a wheelchair, you need to book a disabled cabin, because if you don't, you can't put the wheelchair in the corridor. It has to be able to go into the cabin with you.
Are there sufficient facilities to accommodate disabled travellers on cruises at the moment?
Absolutely. It's, to be honest, if it's done right, it's the best holiday in the world. I mean, I know a lot of people, for instance, who have dialysis, and there are certain cruises where companies take all the equipment on board and the customers have dialysis while on their holiday.
Yeah.
And they go downstairs, they have their treatment, they come back up and have a drink, you know, and they're on holiday. It can be for everybody if you know what ship to book that suits you and what destinations to go to that will also suit you, so that you get the most out of it, you know.
Do you think that your book would benefit the companies hugely by adapting their holiday to every need, to everyone, from children to elderly couple, not necessarily have illnesses?
It does. And, you know, it covers pregnancy. And also, there's a whole spectrum of things in the book that people might not even think of, but they'll be asked the question and they wouldn't know the answer. And I have tried to cover every area. As I said to you, I've cruised myself for 40 years.
Yeah.
I've learnt a few tricks and tips along the way, you know.
A lot of researches come from your own experiences on the cruise. So not just 3 years' work, it's over the last 14 years. Do you think it's accumulation of all the things that you saw during those years?
It is. And for instance, let's say you've got someone you look after who has problems and they have an electric bed, a special bed. They won't even realise that they can go on the ship, because there's a company called Mobility at Sea that are the biggest provider of disability aids. And what you do is you book what you need through them. When you get on the ship, everything's already in your cabin, whether it's oxygen, a special bed, hoists, you know, chairs in the bathroom. It's all, everything is there. And then at the end, they come and pick it up. It's literally hassle-free. But if your, you know, person that you care for does have to have special accessories or aids, you might think, oh, I can't take all that on board myself. I don't know, you know. Mm-hmm. You just wouldn't think of it, whereas nothing should be a barrier. You know, it should be literally barrier-free holiday. I think that if you've got the information to hand, it takes the fear of the unknown out of the equation.
That also includes special dietary needs too.
If you're Jewish, for instance, or you have to have halal meals, they can be delivered to the ship. I mean, you know, if you've got a very strict sort of dietary needs, it can all be done and catered for. You know, nothing, as I say, nobody's out of the equation. You've just got to realise it and know it and exactly what companies to use that will suit your needs.
You're probably going to write book two. As you say, you couldn't cover everything because this is your first ever book to help travellers with special need. Or the mobility isn't too good because they probably had an injury recently. Do you know what I mean? So you actually help people across the world, Michelle, by publishing this amazing book.
Well, I hope so. Yeah, I mean, I've already nearly finished the second book. And it's going to be a series. So the next set of books will be port guides for the disabled. So literally, the next book is on Norway. And it will tell you everything you need to know about getting off in those ports. It will tell you what restaurants, shops, etc. have wheelchair ramps, have braille menus, where the disabled toilets are. It will tell you everything, you know. That's why it's taken so many years, because I've been writing a lot in conjunction with the others.
It's very easy to read.
Yeah, I must be honest, I do get a little bit frustrated with books that use all these massive words and sort of convolute a sentence where it could be broken down into just some easy words, you know. Plus, there are books that are just page after page of script, and it's boring. So there's lots of photographs that show you exactly, you know, what a disabled cabin looks like. That might sound easy, but there are just different grades that you can select, you know. There's lots of pictures, and it's in colour, so it's not just reams of pages and pages to read, you know. And I like to make it easy because...
It's like a directory
you're right.
for travelling.
I mean, the thing is, there's a whole chapter on aircraft travel, because obviously there are a lot of fly cruises. So if you're not flying to catch your cruise, you don't need to read that chapter. You just bypass it, you know. So you can dip in to the areas that pertain to you.
You could call it the directory next time.
Well, there's actually a chapter called the directory at the end. It does. And I mean, because I do recommend various companies, because there are specialist travel agents out there who would, again, take the sting out of the tail for you and advise you which ships will best suit what you are looking for, or they'll find out the answer. Whereas a normal travel agent, they're not qualified. They haven't had the training in disability, and a lot of them are very young. But it is getting better with information, but it's a slow process with everything, you know, in life. I mean, if you think about 5 years ago or so, there was no vegan menus anywhere. And then suddenly, you know, it was an explosion where all the restaurants incorporated vegan dishes and supermarkets, et cetera, et cetera. But it wasn't that long ago that it was really difficult to get vegan choice. And I know that because my son's vegan.
Your book is also very useful because some of them don't
exactly.
use computers.
Yeah, I mean, I know how to use a computer, obviously, but I don't like to go online. I want something in my hands. I want to be able to take it with me, say, on the ship, and look at things as I go along, not just before I go. So, yeah, I mean, I'm not particularly one for that. But there's another thing, for instance, a simple little thing like the mobile phone.
Yeah.
The amount of people who get on the ship and they're suddenly stuck with £400, £500, £600 bills, because what they do is they put the phone in the safe and they go, but I haven't used it. No, but you haven't turned it off. You haven't turned data roaming off. And a lot of older people, myself included at the beginning, didn't know that. There is like sections on technology and I mean, if you name it, I have tried to incorporate it.
You say you already completed book two, so that should be out quite soon as well, then.
Well, it would have been, except for the fact that because of COVID. See, the next book is Norway, and unfortunately for them, it's a seasonal country. So it could be only open 4 or 5 months of the year, and most of the shops are tiny little independents. So I literally have to go back to the beginning now and check that they're still there, because a lot of them will have lost their businesses.
And with the Brexit, that means you are very update with your book.
Yes, yeah. I mean, for instance, you've just touched on Brexit. It used to be that you could get on the ship and anywhere in Europe, you could phone home for free, because it was free to call Europe. And because of Brexit now, from March, that stopped. So
wow.
You cannot make free calls anymore. So you get off in Spain, for instance, you could ring England and speak to your son or mum or whoever.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's going to cost you. And you need to check with your provider what those costs are. I mean, the government have put a cap on it. I think it's £46 or something a month if you don't know to turn various things on. Airplane mode is always another safety thing to put on.
I remember that.
But a lot of people don't know that.
But the carer itself also understand what it needs to do as well. So it's helping both sides, isn't it?
Exactly. You know, you've hit it on the nail on the head because, as I say, I think information is a power, and it gives you the power to know everything you need to know before you go, to get the most out of not just the ship, but the destinations as well, so that hopefully you come back having had a fantastic time. I honestly believe that a cruise is one of the best holidays you can take, because every single thing is at your fingertips, you know, and if you don't want to get off the ship, because a lot of people don't, you want to know that you can use and utilize all the facilities on the ship, you know, that nothing is going to be off limits to you. And you know, like the cabins, as I say, the bathrooms on some ship have big lips on them, so you can't get in easily. Even if you're not in the wheelchair, but you can't see very well or something like that, you need to know that there are cabins that have flat access to the bathrooms. Or you can get hearing help in your cabin, where you get vibration if there's a problem, so that, you know, if you can't hear, you still are alerted to the fact there's a problem. So there are lots of things that you can order that doesn't necessarily cost you any money. You just got to know to do it, you know. And a lot of the ships now have hoists for the swimming pools. So you can still get in the water and have a good time. As I say, knowing what facilities are there for you will give you the most out of it.
Wonderful. And yourself, Michelle, you're also the daughter of a much loved singer, Matt Monro.
Yes, well, I'm very blessed for that because, you know, my dad, unfortunately, has been gone 37 years. But, you know, that's been my passion, is to make sure that his legacy keeps burning brightly and that the music he left behind is not forgotten. So, you know, as you know, because you've done interviews with me in the past, promote a new CD.
The double album, wasn't it? Like about, was it about 40
2 years
tracks
ago, yeah.
Stranger
in Paradise.
That
was amazing. That went to number 8 in the charts, and it stayed in the charts for 24 weeks. When I brought the book out on my dad, which is actually 11 years ago now, called The Singer Singer, The Life and Music of Matt Monro, contract ended last year with Titan Publishing, and they rang me last January and said, could we extend the contract, please? And I'm like, what, after 10 years? And they said, the pandemic has made the sales go through the roof. And I'm, of course, it's a new generation of people now. And so those who had the book at the beginning, it's a different age group that are buying it now. It's quite incredible, to be honest. But it's because of people like your good self that give me a platform to talk about these things, that help people know it's on the market.
You're welcome, Michelle. You're so passionate about managing your dad's estate, promoting his music. You have been doing cruising as a specialist speaker as well. What sort of subject do you talk about when you're on the cruise?
On my dad. I talk about the life and music of Matt Monro and how he influences music today and what he's given to people. I mean, you know, as I said to you, the last album I brought out, which was 2 years ago, 6 months in the charts, and you think, wow. Mind you, that album took me more than 50 years. It took from when Daddy recorded it to me to bring it out the way he intended.
Mm-hmm,
so it effectively was a brand new album with new material, but made it a double album. So the second disc was just full of his hits and all remastered. So people could also dip in and out of the familiar, and the new fans could know what the legacy was about. And for me, that's important. And I go on the ships, and I do, touch wood, speak to full audiences. who come because it's nostalgic for them, or they want to learn more, or they may have heard, for instance, Cowan Gates. They used his music on their advert the year before last. And so many people then, who's that? And they look it up, find out who it is, and then suddenly, you know, you get a spate of interest from people. And it's also on Talking Pictures and Netflix now. Our concert is on Netflix. Well, for me, that's amazing. Aww. Constantly, there are new fans coming to light, so to speak, who discover Daddy for the first time. Yeah, every time they bring out a new Bond movie, he was the first singer to do a Bond song. So that legacy is still in existence today because it's a tradition that still has carried on.
By your book, The Autonomous Cruiser, which people can now get hold of, it is published through... Kling Street Publishing.
Correct.
At the recommended retail price, $29.99?
It is at the moment, but of course, the good thing about Amazon is they always discount books, you know, so hopefully the price will come down. The trouble is that it is over 500 pages and it is in colour, which has made it far, you know, more expensive than if I'd just printed a small book in black and white. But mm-hmm. that was given me what I wanted. You know, I wanted a definitive guide.
And it's also on paperback and ebook, only £6.99. That's very reasonable, isn't it?
Well, yeah, that's the good thing about it. And I hope in time to be able to do an audio version for blind people, you know.
Absolutely. Would you like to choose a song from your father's album?
I think we'll choose The Impossible Dream.
Lovely.
It's very apt, isn't it?
Yes. Thank you so much, Michelle.
Yeah. Thank you so much. You know, it's only because of people like your good self that I have a platform to tell people about the work that I do. So I'm very, very grateful.
Take good care of yourself.
God
Bye.
Bless. Bye. Bye.
Impossible dream to fight the unbeatable foe, to bear with unbearable sorrow, to run where the brave dare not go, to right the unrightable wrong, to love pure and chaste from afar, to try when your arms are too weary, to reach the unreachable star. This is my quest, to follow that star, no matter how hopeless, no matter how far, to fight for the right without question or pause, to be willing to march into hell for a heavenly cause. And I know if I'll only be true to this glorious quest, that my heart will lie peaceful and calm when I'm laid to my rest. And the world will be better for this, that one man scorned and covered with scars still strove with his last ounce of courage to reach the unreachable stars.
This is Ling Pang for Bond 9 Tunes International, and I talked with Michelle Monroe.
danger here, and you need some action. We have a remedy that could really catch on. Needs to see another face, a light of time. If feeling dull and run down, we can really make you shine. We've just begun to have fun tonight. Dancing in the city, alleys that we run through. Now we've just begun to have fun tonight. Can you feel the darkness cold? Let the streets have their way. They'll carry you on till morning and steal your soul away. Dancing in the city, alleys that we run.
Bondi Tunes, playing all over the UK now.
This is Bondi Tunes International, the week that was.
This is Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting on FM in Australia and New Zealand and around the globe. Adam Devlin is our Australian political correspondent and joins me from Brisbane in the state of Queensland. Adam, welcome to the show.
Hi, Henry. How are you going? Hello, dear listener.
We have a bit of a time delay on this broadcast, but not to worry. It's your birthday.
That's because I'm in Queensland.
Yeah, you're a bit slow and you're an hour behind at the moment. Adam, it's your birthday this week.
Not this week, no.
Oh, not this week. Sorry, in 2 weeks, two-ish weeks.
Yeah, 2 weeks time.
Right. Yeah. And you tend to take, if I remember when I was working with you, you took the day off from work on your birthday. Is that a tradition that continues?
It absolutely is. I simply will not ever work on my birthday.
Well,
I don't care what job I'm doing. I don't care who my boss is. I don't care what the consequences are, but I do not work on my birthday.
What will you do on your birthday?
Oh, well, that depends. actually, this year, I know exactly what I'm doing. I'm going away a week before my birthday and am flying back to Brisbane on my actual birthday.
Wow.
So I was spending my birthday in the air.
In the air?
And in airports.
Can I ask where you're going?
Sure. I'm heading down to my hometown of Eden. It'll be the first time that us four siblings will be together in about three and a half years.
Fantastic stuff.
We were meant to be doing a family get-together for one of my brother's 60th birthdays 2 years ago, and it's been postponed three times already. But that's happening in September this year. But one of my brothers lives over in WA, Western Australia. My other brother lives in New South Wales, and myself and my sister live here in Queensland. And for those overseas who don't know sort of the topography of Australia, from Brisbane, where I am, to Perth, where my brother Stumpy is. It's probably like going from like London to Moscow or something like that.
Yes, of course.
So Eden, my hometown, is in the sort of the middle of it all, and I've got a brother that lives there. So the four of us are all meeting up there for a week just before my birthday.
Fantastic.
Now that all of our borders are down and we can actually get together again.
Yes, and this is obviously why your brother's 60th birthday has been delayed due to COVID,
yes.
I imagine. And now, just to explain to our audience who may not know, Eden is a small fishing village in New South Wales on the coast, obviously. And it's a beautiful little town, but you can't fly into Eden, can you, Adam?
No, Eden doesn't have a lot of things, and one of the things it doesn't have is an airport. But Marimbula does. Now, Marimbula is about half an hour's drive north of Eden, and it does have an airport, so that's where I'll fly into. Mm. And my brother will come and pick us up. My sister and I are flying down together, so that'll be fun.
It sounds like
it. I don't think my sister and I have ever flown anywhere together. Alone. Oh. I can't ever recall having done that. So it'll be an interesting experience.
Right. Okay. Now, talking about birthdays, this week on the 15th of March, I really have to get my shit together here. I'm hungover from last night. On the 15th of March, Bondi Tunes International turns 13. We are teenagers now, Adam.
That means I can get really naughty now.
Yes.
The terrible teens.
We've been on the air 13 years, and you and Rach were the first on our show. It's a beautiful thing that we're still going, and we're on a lot of stations. So, you know, we've weathered
the
storm.
Fantastic.
Yeah. I think so.
And thank you to you. I mean, none of this would happen without you. So thank you. I love doing it.
Oh, don't. Don't. Okay, Adam. You know, does it take a war to stop the media going on and on and on about the virus?
Apparently so.
Mm.
here in Australia, anyway, all of the premiers have stopped giving daily press conferences on COVID. They've stopped publishing, actively publishing. The figures are still available, but the number of daily cases and such, which used to be paramount everywhere, have stopped being published. All of the number of deaths per day have stopped being published, even though they haven't reduced any. And the number of restrictions on us have all come down to pretty much next to none now. You can go anywhere you want in Australia now. Mm. You don't need to isolate if you're living with somebody with the disease. You don't need to wear face masks anymore. Mm. The QR code system has stopped. So it's almost like the government has just gone, okay, that's it. COVID's over. We're moving on to something else.
Yeah, like a war.
But in actual fact, the truth of the matter is, Henry, of course, as you know, that COVID is anything but over. Mm. In fact, there's a new Omicron variant, BA2,
yes.
which is becoming dominant here in Australia, and it's up to 40% more transmissible.
Oh,
and
what's,
we're going
what's
into
than
winter.
The other one? It's more 40% more transmissible. Oh my god!
Than the standard Omicron. Yeah.
Do you mind me mentioning? And I'll cut this out if you don't mind me, or if you do mind me mentioning the fact that you had COVID last week.
No, I'm happy to talk about that, Henry.
Okay, so you had COVID
horrible.
Last week.
yes.
Tell us about that.
We had a friend come and visit, and she stayed overnight. We had actually two groups of friends stay overnight, and they all left the next day on the Saturday. They stayed overnight Friday night, left on Saturday. On Sunday, she called us and said that her employer had called her and said that she needed to be tested because COVID was going through the workplace. Pardon me. Mm-hmm. So she went and got herself tested and was positive. So she, of course, let us, the other four people who were here, know. We were all feeling fine, but the next day,
you were on the air.
We took
a
test
straight with me. I mean,
yes.
You actually had COVID without realizing it while we were on the air.
Yes. Hmm. Yeah. We took a test the moment she told us. We took a rat an RA test, rapid antigen test, and that was negative. So we thought, oh, well, we're safe. The next day, I think it was, I was talking to you, and I started to get a sore throat. Mm. And the next morning I woke up and I just felt like I had a really bad cold. And the long-suffering boyfriend felt the same. So we took tests and I was positive to that. And then from then on, I went downhill fast. Sick in the way, Henry, I've never been sick before. The headache I got was all-encompassing in my head. It was more painful than a migraine, very different sort of headache to a migraine. I get migraines, so I know what they're like. Mm. But a very different sort of pain, but more intense. Mm. The body aches, I've never felt anything like it. It was just like this sort of ball of pain flowing from joint to joint in my body, like it would be in my leg one minute and the next minute it'd be in my arm and then it would be in my hips or in my shoulders, in my back. The lower back pain was something like I've never felt before. I honestly felt like I'd been thrown down a flight of stairs or, you know, kicked in the back by a horse or something. Didn't have any nausea.
Sorry, did your boyfriend contract it as well? And if so, was he sick?
Yes, and yes, but not quite as.
Interesting how it affects different people in different ways.
Yeah, and we had different symptoms as well.
Gosh.
So... It was interesting just to sit here. Hell, I mean, I had 3 days of absolute agony. Mm. One day I was just rocking on my bed in tears with the pain in my joints and my head and my back. I've never had anything like it. And you know, I'm fully vaxxed and boosted.
I was going to ask about that. You've had 3 injections at this point, inoculations.
Yes.
Do you think, let me just ask you this rhetorical question. If you had not had those 3 inoculations, how do you think you would have fared through this?
Look, I have to sing the praises for the Queensland Department of Health, because once I got the positive test, I reported that on their COVID app. Mm. I got a text message from the government health department saying, you know, thank you for doing that. Here's a click to a survey. Based on the results of the survey, we'll give you your recovery plan. Mm. So I went through and did the survey, and I was also short of breath. And I pretty much got a phone call within 10 minutes of me sending that survey result in from the Mater Hospital, which is just down the road from where I am. And they were pretty much phoning to see if I needed to be hospitalised or not.
Gosh, that's pretty efficient.
Yeah, and they went through a written number of questions with me, and it was all around my breath and if I could breathe or not. And I was having trouble breathing. I was literally, like, sitting on the lounge, like, panting out of breath.
Gosh.
And so they actually said to me at one point, the doctor said to me, I spoke to a nurse first, then went to a doctor. And the doctor, she said to me, we don't have any vacant beds at the moment. She said, if we did, we would have you here now. She said, you're not alone. So she said, we're going to be giving you 2 phone calls a day, one in the morning, one in the afternoon, just to check on you. If you get any worse, if your breathing gets any worse, just get to a hospital immediately. Wow. And they did. They phoned me every morning and every afternoon until yesterday.
Super efficient.
So that service was brilliant. I was blown away by it.
Yeah. How long did we have a time delay? Clearly, how long did you have this for? And did you get better? I know a lot of our listeners will be interested in this. Okay. Did you get better gradually, or because I think I had COVID as well? I took a RAT and it said I was negative, but I'm pretty damn sure I had COVID. And I actually just woke up one morning feeling fine, and that was about a week and a half after I got it. I mean, it was quite a long period. What about you?
Yeah. Look, I was sick, so sick that if what they say about the vaccines reducing the illness and the likelihood of being in hospital, if I hadn't have had those vaccines, I think I would have either been in hospital or potentially died, That's how sick I felt.
So this is a good message for people. And I don't believe in telling people what to do, but I'm getting my booster actually on Wednesday. So that'll be my third inoculation. And I have no problem with this. I honestly don't. I mean, you know, I haven't looked into it. I just do it, you know, blindly. Yeah. I don't care.
And look, I was as sick as a dog where I could hardly get out of bed for 4 days. Mm. Day five, I started to feel a little bit better. The headache was a bit softer. The body aches and pains weren't as quite as severe. Day five, I was better again. Day six, I was a little bit better. Today, I'm pretty much over it all. Still a little bit short of breath, still a little few aches and pains here and there, but that's pretty much it. The headaches have stopped. Mm. So it has taken me a full week to get over it. But as I think by tomorrow, I'll be symptomless.
Fantastic stuff.
Which is good because tomorrow is when I come out of my week's isolation. So I can rejoin society from tomorrow. Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah. And by the way, the isolation is 7 days. Is that right? It's changed?
Yes, correct. It is 7 days here. I'm not sure if it's different in other places, but here in Queensland, it's 7 days from your positive test.
Syndicated into Europe from Sydney, Australia, this is Bondi Tunes.
Bondi Tunes, playing all over the planet now.
If you've just joined us, I'm Henry in Sydney for Bondi Tunes International. I'm talking with our Australian political correspondent, Adam Devlin, in the city of Brisbane. Adam, how are you adjusting? You've moved to Brisbane in the last month or two or something. How is it?
I don't know. It's the short answer.
You can't get out. It's been flooding, of course.
I got here and we were in lockdown because of COVID. Then we were in a form of semi-lockdown, self-imposed, just because when they lifted the restrictions here in Queensland, cases skyrocketed. And so we wanted to avoid it, so we didn't go out for those few weeks. And then just as all of the restrictions came down, we caught the damn things. So we've been in another week's lockdown. So I don't have, you know, been out to a few things, but I've got to say, I think I like it. I think what I've seen of London, what am I saying, of Brisbane.
Well, I know you don't like London.
I'm enjoying it. No.
Oh, that's great. That's look, great.
The climate has settled. Our first month here, the climate was ridiculously hot. Even people who love the heat in Brisbane were complaining about how hot and humid it was. Thankfully, that's gone, and we've got really nice temperate days now, you know, mid to high 20s, nice cool breezes coming through in the afternoons. So that I'm enjoying. I'm enjoying our apartment. And when I come out of restrictions tomorrow, I reckon we might start going out here around a bit and just getting to know the city so that I can come back and answer that question in a few weeks.
Yeah, no worries. And, of course, it's worth mentioning that we're going into we're in autumn here in Australia.
Yes.
So that'll give you a bit of a break until next summer, because I know Brisbane gets really hot every year, really. Isn't it true to say?
Yeah. I'm looking forward to the 3 weeks of winter I'll get.
Yes. Oh, it's not really funny, is it? Let's talk a bit of politics. Now, it's got to be 2 months before the federal election in Australia, Adam. And I noticed that a man called Clive Palmer, who has a party called the Australia Party, I think, and it seems to be right-wing.
United Australian Party.
United Australian Party. I mean, it seems to be right-wing, but it's actually just a very batty kind of party. And he's already pumping out the TVCs. You see ads for him on television well before Labour or Liberal. I mean, does he think he's going to get anywhere with this?
Look, I don't know if he thinks he will. The leader of his party, Craig Kelly, who is an ex-Liberal member of Parliament, who's now defected from the Liberal Party and is the leader of the United Australia Party in the Parliament, he thinks he's going to be Prime Minister after the election. and he's... And he's got about as much hope of that happening as me becoming the new Liberal leader after Scott Morrison loses the election.
Yes.
Look, the United Australia Party, it's a far-right party. Clive Palmer is one of Australia's richest men. He's promised to sink about $80 million into advertising this campaign.
God help us all.
So you're going to get a lot of ads. Although, think yourself lucky you're not in Queensland, because he's a Queenslander. And they're just every billboard up here is yellow and black with him all over it.
That's visual pollution.
So it's disgusting. It's awful. It is, absolutely. And it's you know, if you listen to this man talk, or you listen to Craig Kelly, his leader in the parliament, talking, the biggest cases of verbal diarrhea I've ever heard. you know, the people they're attracting are your usual right-wing nutters, your pro-Trump, your anti-vax, your anti-establishment, you know, those sort of, you know, pro-guns. These, look at any Trump Republican rally in America and replace the American flag to Australian flags, and that's the United Australia Party.
And it's interesting that Clive Palmer is, I believe, has been suing the West Australia Premier. I don't think a Premier has ever been sued before. Do you know about that?
Yeah. Clive Palmer, a mining magnate, has mines in Western Australia. And, of course, due to COVID, the government, Western Australian government, had a hard border closure with the rest of Australia, which means that if you wanted to go into WA, you had to go into 14 days mandated isolation. So you flew in, you were put into hotel accommodation designated by the government, so it was just a cheap old hotel, motel rooms somewhere in the city, and you had to sit in there for 14 days. Now, Clive Palmer refused to do that, and he said it was unconstitutional, and he decided to sue the Western Australian government and the Premier himself, because he couldn't get into Queensland, he couldn't get it from Queensland to WA without doing quarantine to run and attend meetings and such for his mines over there. So he's claiming that he lost hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue because of this legislation, this requirement for him to quarantine if he went into Western Australia. And so that's what he's suing them about.
That happened last week, Adam. Do you know if there's a result from that, or does it just go on and on and on?
Not yet. It's just going to go on and on and on until eventually it'll be thrown out of court. or Clive Palmer will get bored with it and walk away. Hopefully he'll just get bored with it and walk away and concentrate on the election. It won't go anywhere. He won't win because the government is perfectly within its right to do this. And Palmer wasn't banned from entering the state. He could have quite easily done quarantine, or anything he needed to do, he could have done over Zoom meetings or emails or phone calls.
Everyone else does, you know.
Exactly.
He just didn't want to slum it, eh?
No, well, he didn't want to have to. He just wanted to be able to fly, because he's rich. He just wanted to be able to fly his jet into WA and have his limo pick him up and take him to his offices, and so he could do his work. But, you know, it doesn't work that way in a democracy. Not in our democracy, anyway.
Of course not. Look, let's talk more generally about the federal election, which, I mean, have you got an idea when they're going to call this? As we record, it's the 14th of March. Now it's due in May. I'm thinking about
it'll be within the next. It'll be within the next 2 weeks that they'll call it.
They'll call it, okay.
Yep. And it'll be, I reckon, somewhere around May 11. Would be that's my guess.
That's pretty specific.
No, go on.
I was going to say, how do you think it's going? I mean, last time we talked last week, I think we discussed the fact that Labour, the opposition Labour, were 10 points ahead of the ruling Liberal Party. Which is, as you said last week, they wouldn't even need the Greens. They could just do it themselves. Do you think anything's changing? Because they say a week is a long time in politics. Do you think this is going to be a continuum of this distance between each party?
Yes, I do, actually. I think it will be that. There's been every opinion poll this year has started off with about a 7% gap, and it's only gone up till it's now 10% in the last three reliable, predictable polls. have all been around that 10% gap between the two parties. It would be statistically unusual for them to close that gap enough for them to win the election within the time frame that's left. It's not impossible, of course. Anything is possible within an election. But it's statistically difficult for them to do that. It's certainly not been done before. Hmm. And
you sound very confident about this.
Look, I just put the teeth back in. Statistically, I can't see how this government can win votes, win enough votes to win the election. They've got to... They can't lose one seat. They have to pick up seats. Mm. Now, they're going to lose seats in New South Wales. They will definitely lose seats in Victoria. They will definitely lose seats here in Queensland. They're absolutely going to be whitewashed in WA. So they have to pick up all of those seats that they're going to lose. They've got to pick those up out of South Australia and Tasmania and the Northern Territory and the ACT. The ACT in the Northern Territory are strong Labor strongholds, so they won't pick many up there. They might get one or two in South Australia. They might get one in Tasmania, but they could also lose seats in Tasmania as well. Tasmania's a bit all over the shop at the moment with their opinion polls, so it's a bit difficult to sort of guess what's going to happen in Tasmania.
It is worth mentioning.
But with the number of... The number of seats they're going to lose in Western Australia, Victoria and Queensland and New South Wales, it's impossible for them to pick those up in the other states. Mm. I can't see how this government can win the election.
Yep. And it's interesting to note.
I'm just going to mention that
West Australia is actually currently a Labor state and Tasmania is currently a Liberal state. So it'll be interesting to see where that goes, Adam.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I'm pretty much certain that they'll be written out of Western Australia. They'll have single-digit number of seats in Western Australia at the end of the election, I expect. They're just the Liberal Party, particularly the federal Liberal Party. And let's not forget the last state election, the Liberal Party ended up with two members in the whole parliament. So they've got no local members to do any work for them. They've got no funds because they've got no members. Federally, Scott Morrison is so despised in Western Australia because of the constant bickering he's been having with the Premier over the state border closures during COVID. That state border closures that I must say are incredibly popular in Western Australia.
Yes.
And Scott Morrison's been against them the whole time.
People
in Western Australia are seeing Scott Morrison saw him as a danger, as a risk, as somebody who wanted to infect Western Australia with COVID. That's how they think of Scott Morrison. So I know there's still a couple of months to go for the election and COVID, the government is trying to put COVID behind them for the election. But Western Australia is so far behind the rest of the country in dealing with COVID because they haven't really had it until now.
Yes.
That tail will be still there come election time. So I can't see Scott Morrison picking up any votes in Western Australia at all. Tasmania is a bit different, but that'll be interesting to watch. But I reckon that they'll end up with less than 10 seats in WA, and they've got to try and pick those seats up from somewhere else, and there's nowhere to get them from.
Okay, now I want to talk, we've got to go soon. I just want to talk briefly about the Prime Minister, Scott Morrison. Mm. I mean, he really can't do anything right. I mean, just let's look at what he's been up to recently, visiting people in these areas that have been flooded so desperately badly in New South Wales. I mean, wasn't it a big risk for him to go out there and try and talk to people?
Well, let's just flash back a moment to the fires in 2020 when he went down to a small coastal town called Cobargo after the fires. Well, the fires were still going, actually, where he turned up there with a camera crew in hand and he tried to force people to shake his hand and, people were turning their back on him. People were just ignoring him as he was asking them how they were. Those who were talking to him were abusing him. Yes. And this all happened live on TV.
It's great.
Now, flash forward to these floods, and he had to turn up to somewhere because that's what the Prime Minister needs to be seen in such a disaster. Yeah. So he decided to go to Lismore, which was 14 metres underwater,
yes.
Parts of it were. And he didn't want to have another Cobago moment. So he organised with some people, his people organised for him to go and meet some people and see how they are, find out what they need, get their experiences firsthand. But he did it in camera without any news people there. He took his own photographers with him, of course, and got some snaps and so forth. But the general media that travel with the Prime Minister on such events were banned from going.
What?
Now, when he was asked why that was, and was he trying to avoid another Cobago moment, he said, no, it had nothing to do with Cobago. And it was, in fact, because to protect the privacy of the people that he was talking to. Now, have you ever heard such a load of rubbish? and he refused to do a street walkabout as well, which would have been open to the press.
Can you imagine if he did?
So, pardon me. So he did the appearance completely staged for the media. We've seen some of those photos come out. We will see more come out in the next few weeks. And it's been a complete failure for him because, as I said, the press just went, well, we're not interested in your PR propaganda.
Mm.
Like, come and talk to the real people you're talking to.
He's effectively suppressing the media. What is he, Putin? Like, he's suppressing the media.
Well, yeah. And it's good, funny you mentioned Putin because Australians have a history. If we're at war, we don't like to change government.
Mm. Oh.
So so all of a sudden, we've started to see army flat uniforms be standing behind the Prime Minister as he's giving press conferences. The other day we saw him giving a press conference, although there were two army patrol vehicles behind him. He's talking up the battle over Ukraine. He's talking tough about Putin. And if that doesn't scare Putin, I don't know what will.
Yeah.
Scott Morrison sitting there, naughty Putin, stop it, please. Please stop doing what you're going to do. If that doesn't stop Putin, then nothing will. Because I'm just sure Putin sitting there waiting to go, oh, I wonder what Australian Prime Minister, whatever his name is, thinks of what I'm doing.
Whatever his name is. Like he gives a damn. Okay,
exactly. It's gonna
be, we will talk over the next couple of weeks, and we always do anyway, as we lead up to this rather exciting election. Adam Devlin is our political correspondent for Australia, and he is in Brisbane. Thank you for joining me.
It's been a pleasure, Henry. Cheers, mate.
This is Bondi Tunes International. This is Real Radio.
Henry O'Donovan.